Science Radio. The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Call 66 13 68, text or WhatsApp on 166 177, email studio at maxradio.com. The Chief Constable is on Man in Line today. Russ Foster's been in the job since April 2023. And the latest annual report has been received by Tim Ward. So that and everything else you want to talk about, because the boss of the police is here. And faster my, it is Ross Foster. Hello, good afternoon.
Faster my, good afternoon, Andy.
This report, a further reduction in recorded crime of 4.5%. The report comes from 1 April 2025 to 31 March this year, compared to recorded crime figures for the year before that. The reduction in recorded crime is 16.9%. You must be happy with that.
I am exceptionally happy with it, and it's testament to the dedication, the commitment, the tenacity of our police officers and our police staff, as well as working together with our partners across the Community Safety Partnership and the wider safeguarding partnerships and law enforcement.
Ever since you've been on Man in Line, Russ Foster, you've always talked about disrupting organised crime on the Isle of Man. In fact, it's fair to say you've made this your life's work on the Isle of Man, and that's resulted in a full prison as well. So are you happy with the progress with organised crime on the island?
I'm certainly happy with the progress, but there's still more work to be done. We've continued to disrupt, dismantle and bring perpetrators of serious and organised crime to justice. And as you've seen in the report, it reflects that joint partnership working together with Immigration, Customs, Excise and clearly now the Ports Unit being under the auspices of the Constabulary. We've certainly strengthened our position at the points of the entry, both at the maritime port but also at the airport as well, and we're making significant progress, but I still think there's more work to be done.
In what way more work?
I think greater integration with law enforcement partners, greater sharing of intelligence information, and I was certainly really pleased with the recent announcement by the Chief Minister, who's developing the border division within the Treasury, and hopefully phase two touches on that being broadened to a border agency, which I really welcome.
I remember the first time you were on, you were, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but you were almost disbelieving about the fact that our border was porous, the fact that anybody seemed to be able to come here. We didn't know who they were.
That's correct. And even today, we don't know who's here. We still don't know who's coming and going. We are inhibited in terms of some of the restrictions around being part of the common travel area and requiring passport checks. But I do think there's an opportunity, and I know there's a consultation currently being undertaken by the Department for Home Affairs around requesting the carrying of verifiable identification, certainly on the steam packet, but my expectation is that that should be extended to other passenger carriers from an airport perspective as well.
Okay, and when would you like that to happen?
As soon as practically possible, but it's certainly not going to be within this administration now, is it?
Okay. Right, there's a message in from Len. This is from Len. What are your thoughts on the introduction of a national speed limit?
Are we talking about a national restriction across the island?
Yeah, well, I'll give you all three of his questions. What are your thoughts on the introduction of a national speed limit? How do you bring down the number of road traffic collisions on the mountain road whilst maintaining a de-restricted limit? And there's been talk about 20 mile per hour limits in recent years. Are we ignoring the elephant in the room? The real issue is caused when motorists are travelling at far faster speeds.
Well, I think he's quite correct in many respects. So where am I on that? So I think part of the history, the culture around the Isle of Man and some of the rationale for people being attracted here is because there are no restrictions, certainly on certain roads across the island. I think in areas of vulnerability around schools, I'd certainly welcome a 20 mile an hour speed limit. But equally, certainly from the mountain, I think people should drive to the road conditions. And I'll tell you where I would be in terms of this would be a variable speed limit across the mountain, but other unrestricted roads with the accompanying average speed limits. So you could vary them depending upon the road conditions. So if it were foggy, then it's 20 mile an hour across the mountain with a variable speed limit. If it's bright sunshine and the road conditions are appropriate to go as fast as is in the talent of the driver, but also the performance of the vehicle, then it could be unrestricted. So it's as broad as that. But I do think we need restricted speed limits, certainly in built-up areas. Speed is certainly a factor in terms of the majority of collisions that we investigate. And I think certainly this last 12 months, and when I'm talking about the last 12 months, I'm talking about the performance year from the 1st of April 2025 to the 31st of March 2026, we've recorded 3 fatal road traffic collisions. Whilst that's certainly in single figures and is a lot better than where we have been historically, it's still 3 too many.
Will that need, I mean, talking about the mountain and a variable speed limit, would that need legislation or is it within the current rules?
I don't necessarily think it'd need legislation. It'd need a public consultation. It'd need commitment from politicians. But, you know, I'm sure through the regulations that the DOR would be able to restrict the road, it'd then be incumbent upon them to put electronic average speed cameras up there as well as the variable electronic speed limits. But I think that's the answer.
Okay, a question from, I think it's 213, who just said, how much of an issue, and you've partly covered this before, but if you could give us a bit more detail, how much of an issue is immigration for the constabulary at the moment? How much of your time does it take?
So it has a significant impact in terms of some of the complex investigations we've undertaken, whereby the visa system has been abused. We appear to have been having organised crime groups who have been basically facilitating people's entry to here under the false premise that they'll be given work. And they've arrived here. Organised crime groups have retained their passports, their travel documents. They've put them into jobs which they weren't particularly expecting. They've also had their payment paid into the bank accounts by the organised criminals who have kept a proportion of the money. That's what you call modern day slavery. It's here on the island. We are tackling it. Hence, some of the rationale in terms of why we have integrated in terms of our resourcing with immigration, customs and access to actually tackle this challenge. And it will be a continual challenge as we move forward. Hence why I'm really supportive of the Chief Minister's proposal around developing the border division, which will ultimately become a border agency. I think it's absolutely required in the interests of safety and security of the island. And I'd be a fierce advocate.
OK, regarding immigration and cases around that, obviously don't go into any detail, I know you wouldn't, but if you have to have interpreters, who pays for the interpreters?
We do, the constabulary.
And that's a fairly hefty cost.
It is, and, you know, these are some of the challenges which come with a diverse community.
OK, and a message in that just says, we often see social media commentary about the perceived levels of immigration, the potential for negative experiences because of that. Have you noticed any difference in people's attitude?
I have. I've seen the rhetoric on social media. It does concern me, particularly those who anonymise the details. And what I would say is I wouldn't pay too much attention to what's on social media. And I do have concerns in terms of sensationalised media headlines, which then become a bit of a soundbite. People then don't read the detail and base their opinions and their response on social media just around that sensationalised headline rather than reading the detail.
OK, a message for this is Gaz, who just says, now the Isle of Man prison is full of UK drug dealers. Will you be pressing the UK to take greater action to stop more of them getting here in the first place?
Absolutely. And since I've been here, I've continued to develop relationships with the regional organised crime groups, the regional organised crime unit, who tackle the organised crime groups over in the Northwest in particular. In fact, I had a meeting with the ACC with responsibility for the regional organised unit, in the Northwest just yesterday to talk about better use of technology at the maritime ports, both over in Liverpool and also over in Heysham, and as working more cohesively together to identify individuals bringing the drugs and have the interception on the UK side rather than the Isle of Man.
Okay, back to road safety now, and this message comes in from 405. Could you ask the Chief Constable if there are any plans for road safety campaigns? I've searched online to see how many speeding fines are given annually, and the only figure I could find relate to Douglas and Onken, 23-24, where 75 offences were recorded, £9,800 taken in fines. The majority, 46 offences in a 30 limit. I drive every day to work and I live in a village where the 30 mile per hour limit is routinely ignored. Recently, my partner turning right into our road on his bike was nearly taken out by an R plate charging into the village, overtaking a bus and myself. The driver was doing upwards of 40 miles an hour. My partner just checked the mirror at the last minute, otherwise tragedy would have struck. We found the lad later in Port Erin, and he had electron overtaking cycles on the right, as they're clearly signalling positioned in the middle of the road. He only just kept control of the car. His life and our lives could have been ruined, and this is the second time in 2 weeks. Road safety campaigns.
So clearly the reduction of killed and seriously injured on our roads is a priority. It features in the policing plan, but again, we do have a finite resource within the constabulary and we have some significant competing demands. And what we do is deploy our resources into areas whereby we see an increase in terms of both the killed and seriously injured collisions, but also the volume of collisions as well. So we deploy on a threat, harm and risk basis. We can't be everywhere all of the time. But if there are specific areas, we do respond to community concerns. As and when we have a resource available, we will link in with both the community sergeants, inspectors, and again, develop speeding campaigns. We do run wider enforcement campaigns, particularly as we get into the darker nights, together with the Department of Infrastructure, but also Customs and Excise as well.
Do police ever go into schools? I mean, junior schools. Do police ever have a presence in there?
Yes, and we've certainly got dedicated schools education officers across the island who are there to raise awareness around particular crime types, particularly around the exploitation, both criminally and sexually, of vulnerable people, and identifying other arms such as the carrying of knives, but also being encouraged to both take drugs but also deal with drugs on behalf of organised criminals. So there is a presence. I wish it could be more, but again, I just echo my sentiments around that finite resources, but they do have a significant impact and they have been invaluable around some of the significant incidents that we've unfortunately had to investigate over the last 12-18 months.
Okay, you've talked about recruitment or resource a couple of times now, so recruitment and retention and also obviously resources. It comes down to your budget.
It does, but equally, if you recall, Gary Roberts, in his own words, said he's left the incoming Chief Constable with a burning platform, and he was quite correct. We had 24 police officers below our funded strength. Between now and there, by 3.5 years on, we've managed to recruit and retain 48 police officers. However, throughout that period, through natural wastage, through retirements, through people choosing other vocations, and through other matters of discipline, we've ended up losing some officers. And when I've unpicked the demographics for the next 5 years, this is going to be a continuing challenge for us. So we've got to continue to recruit at pace. And certainly when the new administration are formed and we identify who the Minister for Justice and Home Affairs is, they're the very early conversations I'm going to be having around recruiting beyond our funded strength to have a glide path down within 5 years' time so we can stabilise our workforce.
What's the chief, this is Colin on 387. What's the chief constable's view on members of the public filming police officers carrying out their duties and then using that video?
So they're individuals who are trying to get content more often than not for social media sites. And what I'd say to them is, don't interfere with the police officers because you might find yourself being arrested for obstruction. But they've got a legitimate right to do that. I compel my officers to work within the code of ethics, the standards of professional behaviour, and I don't think that will trouble them. But would you like it, Andy, if somebody was filming you all day long while you
were
doing
your job?
I mean,
the thing is, during TT, there are always nice videos of policemen with the wide helmets and what have you, but there are idiots around who want to edit this stuff and make people look... So, but there's nothing you can do about that in law, is there, apart from obstruction?
No, I mean, that's my concerns around social media. So they'll only edit the sensationalised bit of the footage to try and highlight the police in a negative way. I mean, let's be honest, we're not the most popular public service. When we meet the public, it's normally they're a victim of crime, they're a perpetrator of crime, or they're dead or suffering from mental health issues. So we're not going to be the most popular. We're not like the fire service where we're badged as heroes, but we are individuals who on a daily basis do put ourselves between danger and the public. It's part and parcel of the job. I could say more. I do have an opinion, but I don't think it'll go down very well.
Okay, right. Okay, let's get to the lines now. Julian's with us on Manila. Hello, Julian. You're live with the Chief Constable.
Hi, Andy, and good afternoon, Chief Constable.
Good afternoon, Julian, and I hope I've got your name right this time.
You have this time. I've got a couple of questions for you on border security. I was going to ask you about implementation. I noticed that the Steam Packets User Agreement is up for review shortly. I'm just wondering if that would be an ideal time, and will you need to liaise with the airlines to require ID for getting on and off the island? The other thing I was going to ask you was, with the increasing number of attacks in the UK, like Axel Radicabana's killing of three children in Southport, which is less than an hour away from the Liverpool ferry terminal, you've got last month's attempted beheading in Belfast by Hadi Aladid, and then you had the London Bridge attacks by Usman Khan, Yusuf Zagba and Rashid Radwan. Would our current border arrangements allow like-minded people to come to the island without showing any ID if they've got hand luggage?
Of course they would. And there lies the vulnerability. And I'm really impressed, Julian, with your level of research.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. And I think, I'd like to know the reason why there's any kind of resistance to doing this. I mean, I am aware, though, there's another side to this, which is the fact that since 2020, there's 190,000 illegal immigrants have come over on boats, which is equivalent of the population of Bournemouth, have arrived into the common travel area. And if you look over the last 5.5 years, total immigration into the common travel area is 2.5 million people, which is Birmingham, Leeds and Liverpool combined. And you've got the director of the MI5, General Ken McCallum, stated in a recent meeting that 75% of the MI5's caseload is now Islamist extremism. So the common travel area does seem to be, unfortunately, as much as I don't like the idea of having to curtail freedom of movement, I think I'm on board with you on this one, Chief Constable.
So just building on your point then, Julian, what's stopping them jumping on the steam packet over in Liverpool, Aysham, and popping over to the Isle of Man and becoming domiciled here?
Or Belfast. And yet, I'm not sure what the arrangement is if we were to have a Dublin boat, but I assume it's the same as Aer Lingus, where they now do require passports, I think.
So I don't know whether you've broadened your research and looked at what's happening in Belfast, but I know the DUP leader have certainly taken the border force immigration to task. And if you look online, there's a very interesting, challenging performance there between the politicians and the representative from the border agency / immigration, where he can't answer their questions, basically, and there's significant vulnerabilities. So you're right, you know, it's not just the UK in terms of Haitian and Liverpool. We've clearly got direct links into Dublin, into Larne, in Northern Ireland. So again, on that basis, it's increased the threat to the Isle of Man. And as you'd expect, we have certainly built relationships with Angona Sukona in the Southern Irish area, and we've also built relationships with the police service of Northern Ireland up in the north part of Ireland. So just to make sure we've got those free flows of intelligence information to again inform our position here in the Isle of Man and see what we can do to counter any such incursions here by people who quite rightly shouldn't be in the UK in the common travel area, and certainly not in the Isle of Man.
Okay, thanks, Julian.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Okay, last time you were here, Chief Constable, I think we didn't have time at the end, but I mentioned Ireland and you kind of narrowed your eyes and said, I'm very concerned about the situation with Ireland. And so what's happened in the intervening times? Have you made any progress?
We have. So we've certainly been linked in, as I say, with An Garda Síochána in Southern Ireland and with the Police Service of Northern Ireland in Northern Ireland. So we've got those flows of intelligence between the two. And again, we have worked with the border force in the UK and we are working together, and we will see integration, collaboration around joint operations in the future.
Right, okay. A note in from 828 that just says, I appreciate that, and I'll just put this with a question, I appreciate that times are changing, especially in the UK, but does the sleepy little Isle of Man require armed police officers on call 24/7? Is it unnecessary only making firearms visible in a detrimental way? And secondly, a question is, are we being naive about the threats that you just talked about?
So that's quite a complex question, really. And I just point to the response earlier from Julian around some of the terrible incidents that he alluded to, albeit in other jurisdictions. But again, we have got a vulnerability here. We have taken a strategic threat, harm and risk assessment, and we have repositioned our firearms officers to be on duty, kitted up and ready to deploy. Historically, and I've rehearsed this numerous times, it took us 48 minutes to deploy to an incident where the criteria for the deployment of armed officers was met. And I can tell you, certainly since I've repositioned, and it is my responsibility, I have made the decision, and I have to say we have definitely saved people's lives. And I don't want to say more around that, because the incidents which involve those savings of lives are subject to sub judice.
We're with the Chief Constable, Russ Foster, is on Man in Line today. If you want to get in touch, text, email, call and WhatsApp.
Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder's skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
Need quality type 1 stone for your building or contracting job? Then contact Tells with no minimum order for collection or delivery. Call 677-137. Visit Tells Limited in Snugborough or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Skips are what they do.
We're the guys that hire one to you.
Call Tells Skips today.
677-137.
If you have children, pets or a house, talk to Peace of Mind about a will or power of attorney, which will help family members when it matters. Prices from £199 plus VAT. Find us on Facebook or call 632 610.
You get more than you think, but all that you need when you
shop local with EVF.
Because your local EVF filling station isn't just a place for fuel. It's where you can get delicious food to go. Chilled drinks, wines and beers, barbecue and summer essentials, from ice creams to surfboards, plus a great range of local products. Ellen Van In Fuels. Fill up, fuel up and get all you need to go. Open till late.
Shop local with EVF.
This August, one of the world's most loved musicals comes to the Gaiety Theatre. Taylorian Productions proudly presents Andrew Lloyd Webber's spectacular Cats from the 5th to the 15th of August. Experience breathtaking costumes, unforgettable music, stunning choreography and the iconic song Memory in a magical production the whole family will love. Don't miss your chance to witness the Jellicle Cats come to life. Book your tickets now at villagaiety.com or by calling 600-555.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
And welcome to my tropical paradise retreat.
brought to you by The Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
This beautiful, life-giving energy moves to your chest. This feeling can stay with you forever.
The latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman, and available now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
It's 12:30 with the Chief Constable. Andrew's with us now. Hello, Andrew.
Hi there. Good day to you, Andy, and good day to you, Chief Constable. Following on from Julian, I have a concern that the introduction of ID when you're wishing to travel over from, say, Liverpool on a day trip, for example, this is going to lull us into a false sense of security.
Why is it?
Because if you produce your ID, how then is it going to stop somebody from travelling who, for example, is maybe just released last week from some prison sentence for having committed, you know, murder or GBH? How exactly is it going to protect the Isle of Man community in that instance, please, Chief?
So I'm talking about verifiable identification, firstly and foremostly. So how will it? Well, if we understand the threat and risk on the island, and we understand that we've got an individual such as what you've just described who's got a propensity to use violence, then if we know about the threat, we can then put mitigation in place to deal with the threat and protect the public.
So,
and,
when we reflect
in terms of where we have come in terms of the Chief Constable's report, because that's what we're here to talk about today, we've seen a significant increase in the number of people being arrested who have been refused asylum in the UK, who are wanted for criminal offences in the UK, or are engaged in criminality and bringing their criminality here to the Isle of Man. So that's how, Andrew.
But you're not going to know, are you, if somebody was released from, I don't know, Wandsworth last week after serving 10 years for GBH?
Why aren't we? If we've got their details, we in the Isle of Man have got access to UK systems where we can check.
So if that person arrives at Liverpool,
yeah,
instantaneously you're going to know that he was released from prison last week.
If the steam packet have verified the details on the manifests, and if we've got an interest in that individual, or there's some intelligence to suggest that he's travelling here, then we'd be able to make those checks.
Okay, so he books the name under his real name, and he has his real passport with him, and he was released last week from prison. So instantaneously, he's going to be refused boarding.
No, we're not saying that, are we? We can't refuse his boarding. It's just of so, having that intelligence, that same information around that individual, should they pose a threat. And in all fairness, because they've been released from prison, I don't necessarily see that they're going to ordinarily pose a threat. I'm talking about intelligence around individuals who, A, shouldn't be here in the UK or in the common travel area, B, they're wanted for criminal offences, or even missing from home, or C, they're engaged in causing harm on the Isle of Man. That's my interest.
Okay.
And the point I do want to make before we finish is, any law-abiding citizen of the Isle of Man, or anyone coming to visit us here who are law-abiding, then they're going to remain unaffected by this. The only effect is they're going to be required to carry either a driving licence, a passport, or some form of verifiable identification. I don't think it's a big ask when you're looking at balancing that minor inconvenience, if you like, even if it's that, based on securing our island and ensuring that it remains the safest place in the British Isles.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Andrew. Good to hear from you today. Thanks for that point. A note in from Marie on WhatsApp that just said, who, in capital letters, who is holding up this non-showing of ID at borders and why?
Well, it's certainly under consultation at the moment by the Department for Home Affairs, and I'm sure that at some stage, once the consultation has been completed, it will further then inform a debate within the council ministers within Tim Wald's, and it'll be down to our politicians ultimately to make that decision.
Okay, a message in from Wolfie, who says, who's on the Road Safety Committee? Members of the public don't know who is on the Road Safety Committee.
Well, in terms of the Road Safety Strategic Board, I sit on there as the Chief Constable, as does my Superintendent Operations, as does a senior leader from the Department of Infrastructure. We have representation from Isle of Man Fire and Rescue Service, from other partners across the Community Safety Partnership, including Department for Home Affairs.
Okay.
So quite a few.
Any members of the public at all?
No, there isn't, not to my knowledge.
Okay. We're with the Constable, Chief Constable. Constable today on Man in Line. Oh, and Howard's with us now. Hi, Howard. You're live with the Chief Constable.
Hi, Andy. Good afternoon, Chief Constable. I agree with you on what Julian was talking about. The problem lies in, and I think you'll appreciate this, a lot of the people coming into the UK are destroying their identity. So to have ID to come to the island, they'll have to be re-identified, which could be false anything. So I don't disagree with the fact that you should have some form of identity coming to the island. You don't think twice about it if you're going away to Spain, France, anywhere like that. You take your passport automatically. But these people that's coming in, I'm not saying all of them, but be quite a few of them, well, they could be dangerous. But that's not what I come on for. I noticed recently, I was coming back from the south of Ireland, from the south of the island here on Sunday. I haven't seen any of the traffic police out for a long, long time with the handheld radar equipment. And our daughter was over early on in the year, and she drives thousands of miles due to her work in the UK. And she came home here and she says, don't they drive awful fast here on the island? And, you know, she's used to driving motorways and everywhere. And she thought the speed on the island here in lots of places was, well, foolish. But I haven't seen the constables or any of the traffic police out with the radar guns.
Okay, let's find out.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we deploy based on threat, harm and risk. So if we are deploying our officers, bearing in mind, I also alluded to the fact that there's significant competing demands across the island. And if we reflect on my report, certainly in the last performance year, we've seen an increase in 563 calls for service. So it is a challenge for us, but we do deploy when we have assets available in those hotspot areas for collisions. And in terms of people driving awfully fast, well, they will do on certain roads because there's no restrictions.
Howard?
There are restrictions because, okay, you in certain areas you've got 20 mile an hour, but I was coming up the Brown Cow on Sunday, and as a car overtook me, I was doing 45, 50 mile an hour, overtook me and three other cars. It was a sports car, and he put his foot down, and this is one of many. On Saturday, I was coming back from Ramsey, and a motorbike overtook me. He must have been doing over 100 mile an hour up there. But the difference between the Brown Cow is a 50 mile an hour. On the mountain, it's no speed limit. But, as I say, they were both a dangerous form of driving. And it used to be a regular occurrence, and it could instill in the minds of some of these people. And some of these, you see them with the R plates on, they think they're boy racers. And it instill in the mind that there are speed limits here on the island. It's not all unrestricted.
Okay, Chief Constable.
And they should adhere to the speed limits. And not only that, even if there's no speed limits, then they should drive within the conditions prevailing at that moment in time around weather, but also the conditions of the vehicle. And dare I say, and I repeat again, in terms of their own talents as well. And it's usually one of those three where we end up with a collision. So even on the mountain road, if they're driving at a significant speed, causing a danger to other road users, and we can prove that they're driving dangerously, then we'll look at prosecution. Before we go, Howard, I'm just mindful you've alluded to a couple of incidents. Have you got any dash cam footage that we can pick up and investigate in terms of those two incidents that you alluded to?
Not in this instance. Oh, I might have, actually. I was in the car. Yeah, I'll have to have a look at it. I'll run it back. There is a dash cam in the car. But, yes, I'll have a look. But, as I say, the police, when they used to be out, I'm understanding where you're coming from, is the number of officers you've got. But the radar, that there, as I said to the girl on the phone, can be anywhere on the island, and it can catch out. And if you get a few people and a repetitive thing where they keep getting caught, then the idea is going to be instilled in the brain. But,
okay.
You know, I don't know how you're going to stop it, but okay.
All right.
Prevention's better than cure.
All right, we appreciate it, Howard. Thanks. Well, you raised a few points there. One is about visible policing, which I'm sure you get all the time, Chief Constable. And the other one is, could you just tell us what's the difference between driving without due care and attention and driving and dangerous driving?
Well, due care and attention is where you can prove a momentary lapse in concentration. Dangerous driving is where your driving falls below the standards of what is expected from a competent and careful driver, and a competent and careful driver should know that. And I've just reflected on my police training from 33 years ago just to give you those two definitions. So there you go.
Well, I'm glad to know it worked. And the other point then about radar guns, so you mentioned three words: threat, harm and risk.
Yes.
Expand on those, would
so,
you?
So I mentioned we had those three fatal collisions last year, and I also alluded to the fact that that's three too many. But what the Strategic Road Safety Partnership do is we'll raise them, we'll debate them. There'll be a team between the police, the DOI and other subject matter experts go to those particular locations to look at the potential around causal factors and look at what they can do to re-engineer those particular areas. And as part of that re-engineering, we will also look at how we then prioritise them for enforcement. And this is perhaps why you don't see us necessarily enforcing the 20-mile-an-hour zones, the 30-mile-an-hour zones, because in all fairness, that's not where the majority of our killed and seriously injured actually take place.
OK, we're live with the Chief Constable on Man in Line today.
Here at Q-Plas, we're not just blue, we're green. From smart boilers to heat pumps, Q-Plas supply products from the leading brands in renewable energy for a cleaner, greener home. So call into Q-Plas on Snugborough Trading Estate, the island's largest independent plumbing and heating merchants for trade and retail. Or call 673 131 to talk to our friendly experts about the latest cost-effective products in home heating and find out what we can do for you at Q-Plas.
At Bagode Cattery, we've been caring for animals for over 50 years. As a cattery, we care for our customers' cats and treat them as our own. Visit bagode.com or call 321 989.
Manx Mobility in Onchan have it all. Daily living aids, wide-fitting shoes, rise recliners, beds and scooters, including lightweight and airline-approved models. Call in and see how our expert team can make your life easier. Manx Mobility at the top of Summer Hill.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
For over 40 years, Hospice Isle of Man has provided free specialist palliative and end-of-life care for people of all ages across our island. We support patients and families at home, in the hospice, and the community when it matters most. Every donation helps keep our care free. Find out more, donate or get involved at hospice.org.im.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
From morning till late, a new force in food, drink and horsepower has arrived in Douglas. Motor Isle Bar and Grill. Fuel up with awesome coffee, big American breakfasts and grill foods done right. The day rolls on with cold beers or cocktails as huge screens light up with the thrill of sport. Easy mornings to big nights. Motor Isle Bar and Grill, the home of high velocity hospitality. On Wellington Street, Douglas.
The Man in Line with Andy Wink.
And the Chief Constable is here. And, Juan, thanks for hanging on. Juan, you're live with Russ Foster.
Thanks, Andy. Good afternoon, Russ. How are you?
I'm very well, Juan. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Yeah, a couple of things. I'm happy to hear what you spoke about before about your meeting with doing detection on the UK side rather than over this side. I think we spoke about that the last time you were on, so I'm happy that you're having communications there, and hopefully that will empower you and give you time to be able to stop the problem before it enters over here.
It's more than that, Ewan. We're actually part and parcel of their tasking and coordination process, so we have representation when they're looking at resourcing, looking at their challenges that they're dealing with in those meetings, so we certainly get our voice heard.
Great. And also, I hope as well that you're going to have an input with what your thoughts on Border Force. I know it's getting run by Treasury at present when it gets set up. And I hear reports that the UK Border Force are not happy with the way things have been over here, hence the Border Force getting more involved over here, our own Border Force. And, of course, your concerns about LARN as well. If people actually using the Isle of Man to go in through to the UK, as well as people who a year that shouldn't be here. So, yeah, it's a tricky one for you. I do hope that we can get some good working relationship with Border Force. My question would be to you today on full face coverings and religious face coverings, which are they are down to the person who wants them. Would you say that it's acceptable when you're talking about facial recognition and who's coming in the event of national security? Would you say it's acceptable to have full facial coverings, as in the hijab and the burqa, or should we ban them?
You get into a very political situation here. What I will say in terms of that, clearly we would need to have the face revealed at a particular point whereby the camera's positioned, so we could check and verify who those individuals are. And I think I'll limit my answer, in all fairness, Julian, to that, because I can just see social media picking up on this and having a heyday. Yeah. So I'll just pause that there.
Yeah, sorry to put you in that situation. I thought you might come well with that one, but I see your point.
Just coming back to your earlier point around immigration enforcement and Border Force, believe me, I've been well engaged with them since I've been here, and I've got an excellent working relationship with them, and we have done joint operations with them, but also with our newly configured immigration compliance team here on the Isle of Man, and it's working extremely well, just to reassure you.
That's great. Just on a personal note, from where I stand, I think people who come to the Isle of Man are very welcome, but they should integrate and assimilate. And to my purpose, if you're wearing niqabs or burqas and you're not prepared to show your face in a society which is brought up with that, I don't think you're prepared to assimilate into our society. So that's my personal feeling. Okay. I know you're going to take a back seat on that, but thanks for your reply.
All right, good to hear from you. Thanks, Juan. And I want to go to Ginny, who's with us now. Hi, Ginny.
Hi, Andy.
You're live with the Chief Constable.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Chief Constable. Good to talk to you. I just have a question about antisocial behaviour and antisocial behaviour orders that the courts place antisocial behaviour orders on certain people, but there seems to be a lack of follow-up and enforcement. Certainly in some personal experience I've had. And I'm just wondering, what is the importance given to enforcement of community service hours or antisocial behaviour orders? Is it supposed to be monitored on a regular basis?
Firstly and foremostly, just in terms of the context around antisocial behaviour, certainly regardless of some of the challenges we've faced over the 12 months around criticality, we have retained a visible, accessible, responsive neighbourhood footprint across the communities within the Isle of Man. And as a consequence, we're able to celebrate an eye on 15% reduction in antisocial behaviour. So that does certainly concern me in terms of what you've raised. We have been successful in securing antisocial behaviour orders with the courts, and we've certainly, when people have breached them, we've undertaking some intervention, some positive action, which normally manifests itself in an arrest and then before the courts. I do think there's limitations around some of the reparation issues that you raise around community service being linked to antisocial behaviours and so on and so forth, but I think that's a wider debate for law enforcement, community safety and government, certainly in the future administration.
Ginny?
Yes. Well, as I say, from some personal experience we have in Port St Mary, antisocial behaviour order enforcement just isn't working. And
so, Ginny, can I ask that you stay on the line, give your details to the Manx radio representative. I've got my staff officer here with me. She'll take the details and I'll get your local sergeant.
Are you happy to give us your number, Ginny?
Yes, I am.
OK.
I'll get the local sergeant, Joe Lucas, to make contact with you, Ginny.
OK, thanks for that. We've not talked about Moneyvale at all.
No.
And I noticed in the interview that you did for the news team, you said you're very confident or you're a lot happier than you were about Moneyvale.
I'm a lot more confident than I was 3 years ago, Andy, in all fairness. And that's brought about primarily around the structures, the processes, the staffing, the capability, the capacity that we've developed as part of the proactive international money laundering investigation team. So we've got 47 individuals, that's 17 police officers, that's 30 investigators, come forensic accountants, come analysts. And they've certainly been working diligently over the last 3.5 years. And we've certainly got a number of very complex, protracted investigations, which I have a high level of confidence will yield some success in terms of charges and ultimately convictions. I think across the financial crime partnership, so working with the regulators, working with other law enforcement agencies and working with the financial crime sector, I think we've strengthened our position. And again, we've responded positively to all the immediate objectives, and of which there are 11 within the Moneyvale assessment. And I've witnessed it firsthand by sitting on the Financial Crime Strategic Board, the amount of work that's been undertaken, and I do have a high level of confidence that we will perform exceptionally well.
Well, it sounds like if we hadn't done this, we would have been in a bit of a pickle.
Well, we would, and the indication is if we had ended up on the grey list where we'd not met the requirements within those immediate objectives, then potentially we could have lost 8% of our GDP, which I understand equates to approximately £400 million per year. Now, I'm sure someone will unpick that and be quite critical, but based on the intelligence, the information I've had, having sat around that Financial Crime Strategic Board for the last 3.5 years, that is the information that I've been given. That's 8% on your GDP, which equates to a reduction of £400 million a year. It's absolutely vital that we continue the momentum in readiness for the Moneyvale assessment team, who will be descending upon the island come the autumn, and that we present the evidence both from a regulation perspective, a law enforcement, but also around what the financial crime business are also doing to demonstrate that we are an island, we are an international financial centre that has provision in place to counter the funding for terrorism and also to prevent money laundering here on the island.
Did you know this was coming when you took the job? Chief
Absolutely, Constable, yes. I'd done my research. I mean, we're not just one particular jurisdiction that's subject to this. It's a rolling programme of evaluations across all the international financial centres. And again, we can't be complacent once Moneyvale's been and gone. We need to maintain the momentum because, sure enough, they will be around in another 5 years' time.
Did you say 40 officers?
In the
financial crime unit there?
I said 47.
47 officers.
17 police officers and 30 what we call police staff.
Working on these issues. Okay, here's one from Dave. Dave, who said on 472, and he just said, is there an age limit to becoming a police officer? I'm 58 and would like to do my bit for the island. Would it be possible? I'm fit enough to do the job. I'm sure I am, says Dave.
Dave, there's no limits. It used to be 60 at one time a day, 55 for a constable, and then anybody above the rank of inspector, it was 60. But down to diversity, equality and inclusion, that's been changed. There are no limits. You're just required to pass the job-related fitness test, and I'd welcome an application from you. We are recruiting at this moment in time. I am after life experience, and certainly since we uplifted the starting pay for police officers, we've seen to attract a more mature candidate into the constabulary.
That was one of your big things, getting the money up where it's right for starting constables, wasn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. So we're more competitive now.
Why was that a big thing with you?
Well, because they were starting on circa £28,500 a year, and other law enforcement agencies were paying considerably more. Other partners across the criminal justice system, including prison officers, but also fire and rescue, so all the public services were paying more. We just weren't competitive. We now have the starting pays circa £35,000 a year, and after 3 years, incrementally, that raises to £50,000 a year.
How old were you when you wanted to decided you wanted to become a police officer?
I think I was about five or six.
And when you
money wasn't the driver, though.
Yes, I can imagine. And when you made the leap to join, which constabulary was it you joined?
I started in Nottinghamshire initially.
Okay, and obviously you're still there now. So, what would you say to recommend the job to somebody who's thinking of it, even at the age of 58?
Well, it's not done me any harm. I've done some various roles. I've worked my way up through the ranks from constable right up to chief constable. I've had a diverse career, both in terms of uniform, in terms of CID. I am a credible investigator. I've been a senior investigating officer around serious and organised crime, but also homicide investigations. I've dipped out of policing in a force and had 12 months secondment to what was Her Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary, and inspected many police forces. That was certainly a good grounding to ensure that the Isle of Man Constabulary remains an effective and efficient police service.
You sound like you're recommending it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks for being with us today. We appreciate
it. Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
You've been in the company of the Chief Constable of the Isle of Man Constabulary, Russ Foster, on Man in Line. You want to follow up? Easy as pie. Email maninline@manxradio.com. Call the answer phone on 682631. And we're back with an open line tomorrow.
See you.